Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer with hereditary angioedema if you swelled me up with the idea that you missed this week's show. Listen closely. If you want to know what folks are thinking, interested in, and motivated by, you need to listen to your donors, volunteers, advocates, employees. How do you get to the answers to listen to? Emily Taylor talks, we listen. She's principal of Teeny Big. On Tony's Take Two, a webinar or two. We're sponsored by Turn Two Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. Tony.ma/dot for a free demo and a free month. It's my pleasure to welcome Emily Taylor to Nonprofit Radio. She is principal of Teeny Big, coaching nonprofits to meaningfully engage their audiences through human-centered design. Her prior experience is in nonprofit management and industrial design. The company is at teenybig.com, and you'll find Emily on LinkedIn prominently. Emily Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony. Happy to be here.
I'm glad. Let me ask you a question that I'll bet nobody's ever asked you. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes. I've definitely lucked out with the easily pronounceable name.
Excellent. With Martinetti, you know, nobody ever asks and they always mispronounce, but I'm always careful. But of course I
married into a more common name. So it made things easy for me.
Yeah. It's easier to spell, easier to say. Now industrial design is always interesting to me. That I always think of like commercial design, like Cheerios boxes, but that's not strict. That's not industrial design really, is it?
It actually is. It's not the greatest name for a career path.
Okay.
But it's designing of products. You know, it's the people who decide, you know, what your cereal box might look like, but also your phone and your car and, pens and pencils, just down
everything,
to
everything around us has some design features to it. And of course,
someone has to decide, someone who decides how they make it, and that's the engineer. But an industrial designer really decides what it looks like, what it communicates, and how people connect with it.
Okay. Well, and there's different principles around bookshelves than around iPhones. iPhones are a little more complicated, a little more complex. What did you industrially design?
Most of my career was spent in packaging. So packaging really, it's telling you what's inside of something and, you know, why you want to pick it up and buy it. And so really, I like to think of packaging as an analogy for a lot of stuff, you know, how we present ourselves to people, how nonprofits present themselves to each other. It's all a package that someone kind of gets a sense of before you dive in further.
My favorite packaging comes from Apple computers.
I thought you were going to say that.
Really?
That is,
they're so elegantly... They're like the phone, it's like on a pillow. I mean, it's a piece of some material, which is not exactly cardboard, but it looks to me like it's on a pillow, and it's wrapped in a gentle little plastic sheath, and the power cable is perfectly coiled with a little tie holding it. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is what we call the packaging experience.
Experience. Okay.
PS. And it's really, if you imagine opening it up and having all the pieces jumbled out, you'd be really confused of what to do. And so, what I've been trained to do is think of things as a process and how do you present information in a staged way so that someone gets it, someone's excited about it, and they can, enjoy enjoy what's inside.
Okay, excellent. And you're making a segue to listening. We'll get there. We'll get there. But that it's your first impression. It's the way the box looks before you even open it, before you see, just seeing it on a shelf, whatever it is. But then you're doing packaging. So there's also security. Like you got to hold the thing together. You don't want it shaking in the box or whatever it was that you were packaging.
yeah, you don't want people stealing it. You don't want it to
Yeah.
fall out, get too hot while it's shipping. There's a lot of different elements to crunch into that beautiful package.
Okay, cool. And then you moved to nonprofits.
Yeah, so I was able to make a lateral shift where I moved, took my industrial design knowledge and ran a nonprofit called Design House, where we worked on revitalizing local manufacturing using design. And so we would run workshops, and that was really my first forefront into like living in a nonprofit space versus just volunteering.
Okay, and where's the interest in listening and in engaging with audiences on that kind of level? Where did that come from? Well, how did you get interested in listening?
I have
You are
developed
interested in
listening.
listening, right? I mean, that's,
What? No.
yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Let's wrap it up. We're 6 minutes in. Let's.
Let's stop listening. I grew up as a very kind of shy and awkward child, and so I found, but I was really interested in people, and so I found that listening to what other people were saying and figuring out how to connect what I wanted to say and do to that really helped me, figure out how I could connect with people. I almost had to, analyze it versus it coming naturally. And so
Interesting.
that has allowed me to really listen in a way that I think not everybody does, is I'm really looking for the words people are saying and asking them why they think that way, so that I can understand the context of where they're coming from and, whether it's a cultural difference or just, a difference in personality,
Yeah.
it allows me to like bridge that gap and see where people are coming from so that I can then communicate what I want to them.
Interesting. All right. So it's very personal for you too.
Yeah. It took me a while to really like make that connection
Yeah.
back to that's where it came from. But it's fun. I always love just, connecting with people. Well, in the past, in cabs or, at the train station, you can just start up a conversation and hear where people are coming from because it's always a totally different place.
We'll be in cabs again. We'll be in cabs and trains.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's coming. Where are you coming from? Where are you taking? You used to take cabs and trains. Where are you?
I'm in Chicago, so
Oh,
we're
big city
about
of
two
Chicago.
feet of snow in.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about listening. So we're kind of we've already kind of touched about it, but like why it's important. But we're talking about user research. Why should we spend time on this?
Yeah, it's really important. Tons of for-profit companies are doing this. Everything that comes out of Starbucks, and we mentioned cabs with Uber, like they're constantly listening to people and getting ideas in front of people and hearing the reactions to them. And people are just getting used to having these very customized experiences, and it connects to nonprofits too. People have, once you have those expectations, you have those with everything you do.
And
So, yeah, go
well,
ahead.
yeah. So how are companies doing this? Give a couple of examples.
They're doing focus groups. They're interviewing people. They're putting out surveys. They're also running testing. They're getting prototypes out in front of people. They're having, influencers work with them to design products. It's all things that can sound a little overwhelming and expensive. And so that's where I think trying to bring those, the most important elements of those to nonprofits, so it's not a huge cost barrier, and
Yeah.
finding ways to listen in the way you can.
Okay. But I interrupted you when you were describing why this is important. So
Oh yeah,
please.
well, it's important because people are used to having, like I said, having these being more targeted and not just following whatever a leader says. So this is part of, you mentioned human-centered design. This is part of the experience of being less top-down and more bottom-up. How can we, rather than having a leader that has a vision and everyone follows it, to be thinking about, gathering the pulse of the people that we're working with and using that to ladder up to the decision making. It's not to say this is a, you know, everyone needs to make the decision for all, but to have that mm-hmm. input. And I think it's really important this year, because I cannot remember a year where it is so unpredictable what people are thinking. You know, how comfortable are they going out? When are they going to get vaccinated? You know, what is their, how have their perceptions of organizations changed over the last year based on who connected with them and who didn't, and, you know, stories they read? That it just seems even more important to see where people stand, because this is like a, there's no apples to apples comparison.
It's time for a break. Turn to communications. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, CBS Market Watch, the Chronicle of Philanthropy. You want to be in papers and outlets like that? Turn 2 has the relationships to get you on those outlets, so that when these places are looking for experts on charitable giving, nonprofit trends, or philanthropy, they call Turn 2. Turn 2 calls you because you're their client. Turn-2.co. Now back to listen closely. So we're interested in how folks are interacting with our organization, or interested in interacting with it. What's motivating them? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think motivating, and then also, you know, what will fit into people's lives. Like, you no longer have the, you know, the consistent after school programs or the favorite, you know, venue someone attended to. Like, there's, I remember, you know, it used to be you couldn't plan things less than a few weeks out on a Friday or Saturday night. And now, you know, people are home. And yeah. So how do you kind of get a sense of, like, where, you know, as a nonprofit, where you could now fit into people's habits as they bring some of those, you know, more out of home experiences into their lives?
So when I was introducing the show, I ticked off listening to donors, volunteers, employees. Are there other constituencies that we should be listening to?
Let's see, you said donors.
Donors, volunteers, employees.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to look broadly and I call audience, you know, basically people who are following you. And because a lot of those people could become a donor, they could become a volunteer, and they don't really see themselves as such.
So it could include, like, your social channel followers. Could it?
Oh yeah. Is that what you mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. You know, listening, trying to figure out, how do you get them to the next stage? How do you turn them into, you know, one of the other categories? But there's really no end to who you can listen to. I think that's just where I focus, is like, general audience.
Folks who are benefiting from your programs too. If you're doing any kind of human service work, or it could be customers if you're a museum or a theater, right? It could be patrons that way.
Yeah, members.
It may not be donors, but they may be patrons to your museum, theater.
Yeah, visitors. Yeah. And and I don't mean to make it sound too broad, but the real trick is to figure out who you want to listen to so that you can define it for yourself.
Okay. But all these folks, I mean, if they're interacting with you in a meaningful way, don't they deserve a voice in your listening campaign?
Definitely. I think where I'm going with is, you know, the people who maybe are following you on social media will have different things to say. You know, if this is a museum, might have different things to say than people who are coming in to the museum, or people who have donated to the museum for a long time. And so,
yeah.
It's helpful when we're listening to kind of focus who we're listening to, so we don't mix up, well, somebody said this and the other, you know, these long-term donors think this other thing, and you're mixing up the messaging when really, you know, you need to be separating. People are going to have a different perspective depending on how well they know your organization.
Yeah, for sure. And how they interact with it. So that's what we're here to talk about. So we want to avoid this. Yeah. You don't want all the messages, or like all the feedback coming all coalesce together and aggregated. I mean, maybe for some purposes you aggregate it, but you want to know what your distinct audiences are saying back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's about targeting and segmenting. Okay. Right. So that, when you listen, it doesn't get confusing.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about how to do this for different audiences. How do you go about these listening campaigns? I'm calling them listening campaigns. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Can you put your imprimatur on that? Is that all right?
No, I love it.
Listening campaigns? Okay. So if you have different listening campaigns for different audiences, let's talk about some methods.
Sure. And, I always wish there was one that could really kind of all encompass, get the right information, but there's different tactics that kind of are good and bad in various ways. The one I love the most is to just straight up interview people, just talk to them. And this, that can be done, obviously if you have very passionate followers that you can have conversations with them at any time and really talk to them about, why they're a part of your organization. But you can also just go on to Facebook or Twitter and just say, hey, someone who comments, would you have 15 minutes to chat with me? And get them on the phone. Just do that, a couple people a week. And all of a sudden you're starting to get a broader sense of what people who aren't connected to your organization or just lightly connected think about you.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So I like that you say, just comment back to somebody on Facebook. I see, you comment a lot. Would you like to spend 15 minutes talking to us about our org that you seem to be very interested in? Nonprofit radio is action steps. So like, what can we do? All right.
Yeah.
So could you just approach, I guess you could just approach volunteers the same way, or, you're devoting 10 hours a week to our work or whatever it is, 10 hours a month. Could you sit with us for a phone call and talk about the org and then
any interaction is a opportunity. I mean, you could even, if you have a cocktail hour, just go around and ask the same question to a few different people and take note of what they say. It's more of a qualitative kind of feedback, but you get some really great answers. Although I would take a step back and just say, it's good to know what you want to learn. I hosted a conversation earlier this morning about listening to your audience. And it was interesting. I asked the group, if you could just reach into your audience's brain and find out anything, what would you want to know? And the question really stumped people. And so, it made me realize that, like, as you listen, you also need to know what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's like your goal setting for your listening campaign. Every campaign has to have a goal. This is not a volunteer campaign or a fundraising campaign. This is a listening campaign. So what would you like to learn?
Yeah. And it might sound obvious, but sometimes when we just talk to people, we're used to having a conversation, not really digging for information.
Okay. So when you're at that cocktail party, if you want to engage folks in your listening campaign surreptitiously, because you're not going to say, let's have a canapé. Would you join my listening campaign? You're just going to say, these canapés are good. I like the little shrimp tails. So what you want to know is going to inform what question you're going to ask or what questions you're going to ask.
Yeah. But it might be, how'd you find out about this event, this organization? What drew you to come here?
Yeah.
You care? Those kind of questions can start.
What moves you about our work? What do you know about our work, or what's your favorite thing that you know about our work?
Yeah. And sometimes it's a really great time to ask about, what you think of certain words. I was kind of taking some notes on some clients that I'm working with that are having issues. And I work with this organization that's doing contemporary classical music, and they have
So that's an oxymoron.
Modern composers doing classical music. And they always run into probably what you're thinking in your head is like, people associate classical music with the big, white wigs and Beethoven.
Yeah, Strauss and right.
Yeah. And so I'm really pushing them to start asking people, what does classical mean to them, so that they can start to really hear where people are coming from and what they need to say to bridge that gap.
Okay. Okay. How about some other methods? So we got the cocktail party method. We got the casual. We got the social listening. What else? What's more formal?
More traditionally, there's surveys, which can be big and laborious, or they can be quick, just two or three question surveys that you pop into your email. And the thing with surveys is, I think really making sure they ask the right questions. So, again, going back to your goals,
you really need to look at that.
But a lot of times the surveys, they're not great at predicting people's behaviors. And so, a survey, I've run into a lot of nonprofits who will say, we did a survey and everyone thought, Tuesday at 7 was a great time for an event, but no one showed up. Yeah, I think the thing there is, it's really hard for people to predict, how they're going to feel on a Tuesday night. It's different. People have a mode for answering surveys. And so really it's great to get ideas out in front of people for those surveys. Maybe what do you think between these three things, these three messaging campaigns, these three event ideas, or even just, I just lost my train of thought. My cat came into the room.
Okay. We're very family friendly.
Oh, wonderful.
It could be a child, an animal. Not only family friendly, we're family embracing. Family embracing. You're welcome to bring your cat onto the set.
Excellent. She might just join anyways.
Okay.
But having, what I was going to say is having open-ended questions so that you can hear some of the things that you might not expect. So a lot of times with surveys, we might make assumptions about things. And when you leave some open-ended questions, it allows people to participate and feel like they're engaged, but also opens you up to things you might not have thought to ask about.
Do you have a favorite survey tool? SurveyMonkey. Everybody knows SurveyMonkey.
Yeah, Survey, you have a favorite? SurveyMonkey's great. I've just started to use Typeform.
Typeform?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's been nice. It's a little, you can actually do some assessments, but it's a really, it's a little more visually engaging software. So I've enjoyed that. And, I think things where you can, just when you talk about tips, putting things in emails. So being able to put the first question of a survey into an email blast so people can just click on that, kind of get a sense of what the survey is about. And that just shoots them right into the survey versus click on this link to take the survey. And that's right. Just sort of one extra step.
Okay. Do you have a preferred length? You said they could be super long or they could be very short. I mean, I've had folks on saying, no more than 5 questions, or people start to fade out after so many questions. What's your advice?
Well, the big lengthy ones, those are like marketing surveys that some organizations do every couple of years. That's really not my focus.
We're not talking about those.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially right now, people are changing their mindsets month to month, quarter to quarter. And so the shorter you can make things and the more focused, the better. So I'd rather see people, ask 3 to 5 questions a month or every other month than a 25 question survey each year.
It's time for Tony's Take 2. I've got a webinar for you. 5 planned giving websites that set the standard. It's on February 25th, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a romp. It's a quick shot. I'm going to take a romp through 5 planned giving websites in 45 minutes, show you what I love about them, show you what not to do that I don't think is so good on them, and take your questions, of course. Always time, Q&A. Quick shot, 45 minutes. February 25th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and you register for this esteemed webinar at tony.me/pgwebsites. tony.me/pgwebsites. That is Tony's Take Two. Let us return to Listen Closely with Emily Taylor. Do you have a, this is different, unrelated, but it's what my mind is thinking, so I'm going to ask you, do you have an opinion on political polling, like the accuracy of polling? Do you consider that within your, I know you don't do that work, obviously,
yeah,
but you consider that within your bailiwick to comment on?
I've been really fascinated by this, and this is where I go back to, like, whenever you do a survey, you always have to question what people really are, you know, the action versus what they're predicting. And we've seen that with the last two elections of poll numbers just being way off. And so that's the sense that I get that is a result of, you know, asking people to fill in boxes versus trying to get to how they really feel about things. You know, there's definitely, I think with surveys, we can put on we don't want to be mean to this nonprofit hat, or, you know, with political things, like, I can't quite articulate how I feel, but I'm just going to answer this because this feels like the safe thing to do. Mm. And so those kind of answers don't help us.
Yeah. Right. They're misleading, or
yeah,
maybe not intentionally, or maybe, but anyway, they're not helpful. Leave it at not helpful.
Yeah.
I don't want to attribute bad motivations to folks. I don't want to do that.
no, well, like I said, sometimes it's because, you know, you don't want to be mean. So it's a good thing, but it doesn't help.
How about focus groups? Are people doing those online? I mean, it's certainly eminently doable. Are they valuable? Are people participating?
Yeah, I've definitely, there's been focus groups happening over the last year. I find them, you know, there's a lot to be careful with focus groups, because there are group dynamics that you need to be aware of.
You need to be a pro at facilitating those, right?
Yes, definitely.
You don't want to go off as an amateur trying it out.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because, like, you're asking for people's honest opinions and.
Yeah. And it's very hard for people, you know, when I talk about some of those being nice elements, that is amplified when you have a few strangers in a room.
Yeah. Right. Bunch of strangers. Yeah. I don't want to say anything controversial. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Yeah. But then you're not getting truthful answers. Right. So you need a pro if you're going to do
Definitely,
actual focus
yeah.
groups. Right. Okay. Do you facilitate those? Do you facilitate focus groups?
I do not usually. There's a few people I work with that have done them more. But like I said, I, you know, prefer being able to dig in a little deeper with people. With
all right. You'd rather stay out of that lion's den of focus groups and interpersonal.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely done them in the past industrial design world. I've watched a lot of focus groups. So I think I understand how complicated they are. And it's when you get into nonprofits that are so emotionally entangled in our heads that I don't find them as practical.
Okay. All right. So don't try this at home, or maybe you don't need it at all.
Just have a good, yeah.
All do right. some How about research. Another, you got another method?
Well, another, you know, we can also get into more data-driven methods, which is like A/B testing, or doing, you know, sending out several different options. And so this is not listening in the sense that people are voicing things back, but you're seeing what decisions they make.
Yeah.
You're observing their behavior. And so I find observing as another type of listening.
What are some examples of things you might A/B test?
You could A/B test a new message you wanted to use to promote a program or to encourage people to donate. You know, the trick is to always have an action that you want people to take. So you could talk about an event in two different ways, send that out and see, you know, what got people to, you know, come to the event or click for more information, whatever it might be. But those are really, they're harder because, again, you don't get that why, but you do you do get the behavior, which, as I mentioned before, in the surveys can sometimes not come through because, you know, it's not someone's real reaction where this is a real reaction.
All right. You're getting a reaction. You're getting data. Anything else quantitative? You like the quantitative, the quants?
Well, I mentioned observing.
Don't hold out on nonprofit radio listeners now.
Won't keep anything in the zone. Dig into my bag of listening tricks.
Yeah, nothing at the bottom of the bag.
This one is, so observing, I think, can also happen. It's a little harder right now since a lot of people are socially distanced, but observing people's behaviors, and this could be, you know, watching people at an event. How many people, like if you have different tables, where are they going? You know, keeping track of some of those things. Are they paying attention to different speakers?
Right. When your CEO gets up, does everyone go to the bar or the bathroom? That's a bad sign.
Yeah. Or you just don't know what it means. You know, I was thinking of examples.
It probably means they don't want to listen. I mean, if they're going to the bar to drink when the CEO or the bathroom, they probably don't want to hear the CEO. So that's bad.
Well, I always think of the example of, their friend gave a speech at an event and came up to her afterwards and was like, "What? Why did you hate my speech? What was wrong?" And she realized she had some sour candy in her mouth the whole time. And so she was kind of like making these
grimacing,
disapproving faces unintentionally. And so this is where you don't want to make those assumptions. And so we can observe.
All right.
And that'll help us.
You mean there might be an alternative? It might be an alternative explanation for everybody going to the bathroom when you're
sitting. Maybe you had too much punch.
Maybe what?
Maybe you served too much punch.
Too much punch. All right. So maybe it's the timing. Okay. all right. So that's interesting. Yeah. So observing dynamics in a room. Where are people huddling? What might you learn from things like from that, those kinds of observations when we get back to in life or real whatever kind of person to person events, what might you pick up or what have you seen? That's interesting.
Let's see. I mean, you can learn, like, I'm thinking of an example, like at a museum, you know, where are people stopping and taking the most pictures? You might learn like what elements of a space are engaging to people. And that could then lead you to ask more questions about why that seemed more interesting to people. So sometimes observation helps us come up with more questions than answers, but very, very helpful ones.
Yeah, because those questions then could become goals for the next phase of your listening campaign.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, to the museum example, someone might not realize they were, you know, idling in a certain room and taking more pictures if you would ask them in a survey or even in an interview. But if you observe them doing that, then they have to kind of think a little bit more about why that appealed to them.
Right. Well, that's if like they're hanging out in the French nudes room. Of course, they're all going to say, I didn't realize. I didn't know I was there that long. Really? Yeah. I was there 25 minutes?
Any assumptions about that.
Yeah. I thought I breezed right through the nudes room. All right.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to share?
Our sometimes our minds remember different behaviors than what we actually did.
Yes, for sure.
Let's see if I can think of other ones. I think that kind of covers it. I was going to add to observations is, and this is less like little observation, but seeing what else people do. And so this could be understanding, you know, where does your audience shop? What other things are they doing with their time? And so this, it's not really a different method. You might still need to do a survey or interview, around this, but to understand, you know, those are behaviors that we can then use to work with our programs. And so understanding that people, you know, maybe are more organic or vegan shoppers might then lead us to think more about the food we serve at an event, or how you're appealing your mission to people, especially like newer people, there might be some connection you can make with other habits and behaviors that they have.
Or knowing maybe what other causes folks give to.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and knowing that someone shops at eco-friendly stores might then, you know, make them more connected to a sustainable part of your organization. It might
yeah.
be, you know, knowing that you have sustainable practices could be more appealing to them.
Right, right. You want to share that. Okay. Time for our last break. Quote, "There's nothing as simple as dot drives. Our executive team meets once per week to sit down and go through our dot drives pipelines. It's fun to watch them have a healthy dialogue and to see them get excited about their numbers rising toward their goals. Dot drives has allowed us to take those key relationships and bring them to a deeper level." End quote. That's Wendy Adams, Director of Donor Engagement at Patrick Henry Family Services. Prospect to donor, simplified. Get the free demo for listeners, also a free month. It's all on the listener landing page at tony.ma/dot. We've got buttloads more time for listen closely. And I hope that's what you're doing. How did you get the company name Teeny Big?
I gave myself a small window to come up with a name. And what I really liked about it is I love zooming in and out on things. And so the big picture is very fascinating to me, but then to zoom in on these little details that we might observe and zooming back out to see what we can broadly learn from those, that really drew me to the name.
Okay. Now, this is interesting. So why did you give yourself a time frame for choosing a name? Did you feel like you could go on forever if you didn't constrain yourself?
Yeah. Coming from the design world, I knew I could spend endless amounts of time. And so, yeah, that was an entrepreneurial practice I learned of give yourself 45 minutes for an idea and just come up with as much as you can and then pick the best one.
You had a company name in 45 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
That's all right.
And then 45 minutes for the logo. Yeah. Kept it moving.
Yeah. No, for a clever name. Okay. Interesting. That was a very productive 45 minutes you gave yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting when you give yourself constraints. Sometimes you can get a little more creative.
Yeah, that's for the those of us who work in the last minute. You feel that pressure. Now, I'm not saying, you know, last minute, but it's time pressure. You do other things until you know that you're at the point where you absolutely have to focus on something else, and then you do. I mean, it's amazing, you know, how I can squander 3 hours and it's amazing what I can do in 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's a part of the brain I've not quite understood, but it definitely forces some focus that helps.
Yeah, it's valuable. It helps me. I mean, not that I'm squandering 7/8 of my day and then I'm only working a half hour a day, but the time pressure of an imminent deadline helps me.
Yeah, sometimes you have to force it in yourself. I'd like to think if I really didn't like any of the names, I could just give myself another 45 minutes, but luckily I didn't have to.
All right, then you're cheating, but then you're going to cheat yourself.
I know.
You're not setting real boundaries. You're not supposed to abandon your boundaries, Emily. You're supposed to stick to
it. This part of my brain was telling myself that, and then the other part was like, wait.
Maybe if I need more time. All right. Where else should we go? Where else should we go from here? Where do you want to talk about?
Let's see. One of the things I love to talk about that I think is not happening very much in the nonprofit world is prototyping and testing. And so I mentioned this a little bit in the ways to listen. And this kind of gets into, again, like a lot of listening, and I'd say, you know, professional listening, not just conversation, is trying to get answers to these questions that people aren't always able to articulate. And so when we can get ideas in front of people, that allows them to react. So, you know, you might be able to say, oh, what would get you to come to this next event? Do you want pizza or free wine? Or, you know, you might be able to I phrased that the wrong way. You might ask somebody that and they might say the obvious answers like pizza and wine or a discount. I feel like that's sort of the ultimate answer to a lot of nonprofit questions when they do surveys, is people are like, oh yeah, I would come if I just had a discount or if it was a free ticket. And yeah, if I, like, the amount of nonprofits I hear that say, well, they gave them the discount and they didn't come.
Yeah.
And so if instead we get ideas in front of people and say, you know, what if we had a Q&A at the end, or what if we, you know, told you some really interesting stories about this artist or composer, you know, and maybe share some of those tidbits so they would understand what that actually meant. You can start to paint a picture that they can get excited about. And so maybe it isn't about the discount or the free thing, but it's about the interesting value that they would get out of it. And they're able to react to that rather than having to come up with the idea themselves.
All right. Can you give another example? It feels like we're talking in the, you're talking in the abstract. Can we, can you come up with an example for us to ground this?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me think of a good one. So let's see, with there was an organization that they were really having an arts organization that they discovered that people were viewing them more as a entertainment venue. So people were coming and supporting them through ticket sales, but they weren't moving towards donations and really seeing this organization as
I think that's pretty common among
arts. Yeah. And so they're kind of struggling in this barrier. And so what we did is we actually prototyped three statements that they could say ahead of their programming to remind people about the broader work that they were doing, what happens, you know, when they left the building. And we hit different, you know, emotional touch points. You know, one was really about the big picture of how this organization fit into the world. One gave some practical numbers around the impact they were making. Mm-hmm. I think one told a good story about the history of the organization. And so those were prototypes. Those were three different ways they could talk to people about why their organization was more than just entertainment. And so then they could take those concepts and whether it was in a survey and have people kind of choose which motivated them most, or through an interview where they can literally just get, you know, ask people what they thought about those different, you know, those different statements, and use that to then build a really powerful statement that when they did actually go to have their next event, they had the confidence that that would make an impact.
Okay. Okay. Helpful. Thank you. All right. Anything we should be cautious of when we're doing this work, maybe whether it's casual at the over the canapé table at an event, or whether it's more formal, any lessons learned that we should avoid?
Yeah, I mean, going back to some of the things I said before about, you know, people don't always know what will motivate them. Yeah. And you know, they don't always know they can't always predict their behaviors in a certain situation. And so I've definitely learned to live with this certain sense of uncertainty.
A certain sense of uncertainty.
Yeah. A certain sense. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a mouthful. You know, listening is a process. And so it's not as concrete as, you know, maybe some more quantitative data points. But it's something you should always be doing, but always questioning. And this kind of goes back to making assumptions about people. You want to make sure that we're not taking people literally, that we're trying to figure out the motivations behind them, not just the functional touch points. So maybe, are they attending an event? Would they want to attend an event, but also the why behind it, you know, what really draws them to your organization, what caught their eye about that event, and using that to then, you know, kind of taking those bits and pieces and building a story about them slowly so that we're not, sorry, I feel like I'm kind of getting in a little bit of a word jumble right
it's
now.
Okay. Well, first of all, for functional touch points, I almost put you in jargon jail.
I know.
So, all right. Okay. So flesh out a little closer. Okay. Don't worry. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Tony and I were just talking about jargon on LinkedIn. So it's,
that's right.
My watch out is to always sort of live in this hypothesis with listening. And so I think of it as like a scientist. And
okay. What's the hypothesis? That you have a hypothesis going in.
Well, so a scientist is, studying rocks, and they might find certain information about those rocks, but they always have to keep questioning. Is that true? Is that true? Is that, is that really, the truth? And so I think with listening, it's the same thing. People are complicated. And so, we can keep listening and gathering more information. But we also have to know that it's not solid ground that we're standing on. It's something that might ebb and flow throughout.
Okay.
As time moves on. And so you have to live with some uncertainty. I guess what I'm saying is that if you you don't just do a survey and wipe your hands and think you have all the answers.
Understand. Okay. Right. You may need to have, you may very well need to probe further. Ask a little more question, dive deeper to get to the real motivations, people's real motivations, moves them.
Yeah. And, year, as vaccinations happen, the ideas that people said in March might not be the same as in September. So you just have to live with some of that uncertainty.
Okay. But it's still worth probing. It's worth.
Oh yeah.
So you're listening campaigns, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than saying the wrong thing.
All right. We're going to leave it there. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Emily Taylor, principal of Teeny Big at teenybig.com, which was derived in 45 minutes or less. Thank you very much, Emily. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
I did pronounce your name right, right, Emily?
You were spot on.
Okay. No more shy and awkward either. You're over that. You're shyness and awkward. at least on Nonprofit Radio, you are. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next week, strategic execution. You know strategic planning. Now what? If you missed any part of this week's show, I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. tony.ma/dot for a free demo and a free month. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.